אורית צדיקביץ' and אלון פוטרמן with כפר עזה טוק.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Kfar Aza Talk. It's been a while since we've done an episode of Kfar Aza Talk, and a lot has happened since. First of all, I have a new co-host, an amazing woman. Born and raised in Kfar Aza, her name is Orit Zadikevich.
Ah, hi, Noam.
Welcome to the show. And
so happy to be here.
Thank you for taking over for Noam as she travels the world after her army service.
Yes.
It's nice to have you here with me. And we have a special guest here today. Hi, Avidor.
Hi.
Who are you?
Well, I'm Avidor. I'm 39 years old, born and raised in Be'er Sheva, lived in Kfar Aza with my wife, my daughter, and my newborn son.
Oh, mazal tov. Congratulations
Thank
from
you.
All of us here. So how does a nice guy from Be'er Sheva wind up in Kfar Aza?
Well, my wife grew up in Kfar Aza. She was born in Kibbutz Niran. Mm-hmm. The kibbutz next door, and when she was about 12, she moved with her parents and her sisters to Kfar Aza, and she lived there until the beginning of her service, army service. And after that, you know, she traveled abroad, came back to Israel, started studying in the university in Be'er Sheva. And
is that where you met?
Yeah.
Nice.
And the funny thing is I was a student in Sapir, and I was from Be'er Sheva, and she was from the Gaza envelope, and she came to study in Be'er Sheva. We met in Be'er Sheva. We found out that we have a lot of mutual acquaintances.
Nice.
A lot of my family is from Niram, and her parents and my parents, she knew most of my family, and
so that made everything easier.
Yeah,
if she knew most of your family, it's like, well, there's no question.
Yeah,
here, right?
I know his family. He's a good guy. It's okay.
How long have you been together since?
10 years.
Oh wow.
Yeah, right. We're 10 years together. We have 2 kids, and now we started our new lives in Ruhama. Kibbutz Kfar Aza.
We'll get to that in a minute, but let me ask you, pre October 7th. You fell in love with a girl from Kfar Aza.
Yeah.
You found yourself living in Kfar Aza.
Right.
What was that like? Like the era before October 7th, deciding to follow your heart, go to Kfar Aza, start a family there.
Although I really like the Gaza envelope, the kibbutzim in Gaza envelope. I've been there for most of my life. I mean, I have family in Niram. My army service was in the Erez checkpoint. And I studied in Sapir, so somehow I always found myself in that area. In the beginning, when my wife was pregnant, and it became a lot more important to her when our baby Sal, our oldest daughter, grew up, and She told me that she wants to move to the kibbutz, be closer to her parents, and the educational system in the kibbutz is something that she wants that our daughter will be part of. And we thought it will be a good idea. In the beginning, I didn't want to leave the city, because I'm a city boy, and I like all the conveniences that the city will provide you. In the end, she convinced me, and we moved to Kfar Aza, and we lived there for about 2 months before October 7th. And those 2 months were amazing. I mean, I didn't work. I was only with my daughter in the kibbutz, and it was wonderful. I mean, it was peaceful. It was quiet. The air, I could breathe for the first time, and it was amazing. I mean, I didn't hear anything from our neighbors across the border, and
no concerns. Nothing came to mind about the fact that Sajaiya is about 2 kilometers away from Kfar Aza. Like I hear it from people who were born and raised there. I hear from people who've chosen to live there and have been there for a long time. But you were a newcomer at the time.
Yeah, but I was always part of the area. When I was a student, I lived in Kibbutz Dorot. And I have a family, as I said, in Kibbutz Nir Am. And I served in that area in the Erez checkpoint. So I knew that the area was kind of dangerous, but I don't know, maybe it's the Israeli mentality of everything gonna be okay, the Yeh Beseder.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think about it. I remember on October 5th, 2023, I spoke with my friend. I told him, you should come on Saturday to the kibbutz. It's beautiful here and it's peaceful. And we have a huge lawn right in front of the house. And we can have a barbecue and a couple of beers and everything. And he said, and don't you worry about the riots on the fence. I was like, what riots? What are you talking about? And I'm not a kind of person that is disconnected from everything. I'm very connected. I'm always on the news because I used to be a journalist. So I always know most of the things that happens. And I thought, okay, so it's another a minor military conflict right there on the fence. Nothing I should be concerned about. Well, little did I know that
I can't blame him for not be, because this is how we all were at that time. Nothing felt dangerous, nothing. If newcomers would come to the kibbutz, I was so happy. And after October 7th, sometimes I thought, I felt guilty. I said, maybe I was supposed to tell them, listen, this is a dangerous place to live in. Don't come here. But at that point, I didn't think about it. I was so happy that people coming choose to come to Kfar Aza.
Look, my family, my broader and wider family, lives in that area since 1941, 44.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about more than 80 years. And most of them, they died of old age, you know what I'm saying? So I really didn't have anything to be, I didn't think that I have anything to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
And of course you have Karen's parents there that are very nice people, that I know them very well. Cindy, I worked with her in Sapir College. And also Igal was a lecturer in the department that I was in the industrial management department. He was a very successful agriculturer. He was very professional in especially raising potatoes.
Potatoes and cotton.
And cotton. So we used him as a lecturer and I knew them very well.
He was a very bright man, Igal. And of course Cindy, she was amazing. I mean, she was this hippie mom that she will always tell you, go with your heart. I mean, I as I said before, I was a journalist and I quit my job as a journalist. I worked for a big news company and I quit my job and decided to go to the high-tech business and worked there for about a year. And I was kind of miserable. I mean, the salary and everything was really good, but the work wasn't as interesting as working in journalism. And and she told me, like, follow your heart. And I think maybe couple of days later, maybe a week, I found a job as a media consultant, and and she came to me and told me, like, see, I told you so.
And if I remember correctly from Karen's stories, because I remember meeting her right after October 7th and learning about her parents, your mother-in-law also followed her heart, right? She moved to Israel. She wasn't from Israel.
No, she was from Minnesota.
She followed her heart, right, and found a nice Israeli guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened then?
Well, she came to Israel, if I'm not mistaken, she came to Israel twice. And the first time she came to Israel, and she went to Kibbutz Endol when she was a college student. And then she came back to the States and came back to Israel. And well, she came to Niram. She came at first to Kibbutz Yad Mordechai, to the Hebrew school, the Ulpan, where my father also went a couple of months later. And then, if I'm not mistaken, in about 81, she met Igal. They fell in love. They got married in 83. And in March of 85, their firstborn was born, Mayan Flash, my sister-in-law. And she's very...
Was Igal from Kfar Aza?
No. Igal was born in Ayanot.
Okay.
And he moved to... At the beginning, he moved to Niram as a part of the Nahal, Gar'in Nahal.
Got it.
And they lived in Niram till 2001. And then they moved to Kfar Aza.
We were speaking about them in a past tense. So I think maybe we should
explain
about it. So...
Well, this is a tough topic, but Igal and Cindy were killed on the October 7th massacre and in the massacre of Kfar Aza. As far as I know, they were maybe the last, or maybe the couple before the last that were killed in the kibbutz. They were killed on October 7th at 5 p.m. This was the last message that we got about him.
Karen, they were killed in their own home.
Yeah. And the terrorists came to their home and they murdered them in their own home. The home that they just finished, I mean, couple of days before October 7th, just finished renovating.
Wow.
Yeah. After 60 months, they've been to Be'er Sheva, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they lived right near us in Be'er Sheva. They subletted an apartment about, I don't know, maybe 50 meters from us.
To be close to their granddaughter?
Yeah. And
a few months before that, Cindy retarded. So she had plenty of time to plan the new life.
She just retired, I think, in January of 2023.
We had a very big party.
She had her 67th birthday. And she announced her retirement from the Superior College.
Mm-hmm. Where were you on October 7th?
In my home, safe room. With the,
how far away is that from where they lived?
Maybe 150 meters. Right. I mean, aerial. Maybe 3-4 minutes walk.
So you were home with your wife and daughter?
Yeah,
in the safe room. And how did you communicate with your parents-in-law?
Well, fortunately, we had power at home. And because we had power, we had Wi-Fi, and so we were able to communicate via the WhatsApp and messengers and all of those types of media. And in the beginning of the in the first couple of hours, I also had the cellular reception, so I was able to talk with a lot of people and try to call whoever I can just to understand what's happening and to call for help. I mean, I remember then that in the beginning, my army unit, my reserve unit called me. Now, I was discharged about 2 years prior.
How old are you?
I'm now 39. And I was just discharged when I was about 37 years old, 36 years old, because I had a heart surgery. So I couldn't be a combat soldier anymore. And I didn't want to be in the rear, so they discharged me, and they still called me on October 7th, told me that we have a conscription right now, we are mobilizing, so come on, let's go. And I said to them, okay, I'm in Kfar Aza, come with all of your stuff and rescue me, and I will go with you. And that was the last time I heard from them. And yeah, we've been there for more than 20 hours, about 22 hours, wow, with a baby that celebrated about maybe a week before, celebrated her first birthday. And
were they at the celebration?
Yeah.
So they got to be at that birthday party.
Yeah. It was in our kibbutz home. It was really nice. Karen made a couple of pizzas, homemade pizzas. And Karen, like her mother, she's also a master baker. Mm-hmm. And And I remember the taste of the pizzas till this day. It was, wow. Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean,
I believe
Cindy used to bake Trina cookies, yeah, very well.
Oh, wow.
Trina cookies and financier cookies and all kinds of pastry and sweets. Eagle had a really, 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 really serious, how you call it?
Sweet tooth.
Yeah, I mean...
Sounds like he was married to the right woman.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like it was a perfect match. I mean, amazing. He was always with, you know, he was always so grounded and sometimes even pouting. And Cindy was like so free spirited and smiling and singing and everything. And
when did you find out what happened to them?
Well, I don't remember exactly what happened, what the chain of events, but I remember that I think maybe a couple minutes before 5 p.m., I saw a message that someone's trying to break into their home, in the kibbutz. And I think it was about 5 p.m. And I told Karen, I think you should send a message to your parents to see if everything is okay. And she asked me why, and I told her, just trust me. I don't want to say, okay? And she sent a message. She didn't get any reply. I tried also to send a message and tried to call them and everything. And we didn't have any answer, nothing. And we started, like, this was one of my main concerns. I mean, of course, we wanted to survive and I had a little baby, but... We felt in about, I think, when it was about 8 in the evening, I started to feel a little bit safer. And
why?
I don't know. Maybe because we've been there for so long and I said just, you know, like, screw it. I mean, how bad can it be? And
how did you get out?
Givati soldiers came and rescued us. They broke through our front door. And then they tried to get into the safe room, and I thought it was the terrorists, so I held the door, and then I don't remember exactly what I told them, but I want to hear something about their accent. I mean, I want to hear if they have Sabra accent, Hebrew accent, like a native Hebrew accent, something with resh, because the way that. Like those that were born in Israel, we pronounce the resh from our throat.
Right. Mm-hmm. Resh.
Yes.
As opposed to resh.
Oh, resh.
Resh, right.
Yeah, like my father.
Right. Where is he from?
From the former Soviet Union.
Okay, there you go.
And I don't remember exactly what I told them, but they came in. I hugged the first soldier. He was a young boy, I mean, maybe 19 years old.
Wow.
Like, he had, like, 3 hairs on his face. And and they rescued us, and we went to the safe room in Hillshlow home, right across. We've been there also for a couple of hours with about, I think, maybe 12 or 16 people and 3 dogs. And
at that point, if I'm following correctly... It's about 3 hours since your parents and were killed. So 3 hours, and you
Even
don't
more,
know what's happening with them.
It's more, like, more than, like, it's more like 5 hours. It was already in 10 p.m.
Oh.
So
you're rescued by Givati soldiers, taken into a safe room of neighbors who live nearby.
Yeah.
But don't know what's happened with your parents-in-law yet.
Yeah, right.
No communication.
And we're asking, maybe someone heard something, maybe, I don't know. Anything, and we didn't get any information, nothing. And then after a couple of hours, they there was a lot of events in between, but in the beginning they took us, the soldiers took us out from the safe rooms, and we started marching all across the kibbutz, all around the kibbutz, around the perimeter fence. Not the perimeter fence.
By foot.
Yeah, by foot. Not in the perimeter fence, I mean, and on the trail inside the kibbutz, in order to go to the gas station, right? That's located right above the kibbutz.
This was the safe zone.
Yeah, it wasn't that safe, by the way. We heard it in the army briefings. afterwards. So we got there and we started looking for them, and nobody heard anything. And then they took us to Moshav Odaya. We've been there for, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. We called our friend from Herzliya.
Is that like a stop on the way to Shfaim?
Yeah.
Okay.
They took us from from Kfar Aza to Hodeya. And that...
Just like, in junction? Not even the village?
No, to the Moshav
inside,
itself.
Inside the Moshav?
Mm-hmm. Okay. They took us there, and but the way there was surreal. I mean, it's like you go on the road inside of Israel. I mean, you go to the east, and you see like piles of dead bodies on the sides of the road.
Wow!
And I really didn't understand. I don't understand till this day what exactly happened there and what was the magnitude of.
How often, and excuse me if this is a ridiculous question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, now that it's a year and a half down the road, how often do you see that image, even though it's been a year and a half since? Do you vision it? Do you remember it? Do you think
every once in a while
it still comes up?
Yeah, a lot of images from that day still come up. A lot of images. Well, I don't exactly know what's real and what's not, because I remember in the first couple of days you heard a lot of eyewitnesses and all kinds of things that people said, and about the atrocities that happened in the kibbutzim, in Nir Oz, in Be'eri, in Kfar Aza, and in the Nova Festival. And I don't really know if it was like a mental picture, a lot of the things, if it was like a mental picture, or was it a real something that I've seen with my own eyes. But I can tell you this, that I did see all of those piles of dead bodies on the side of the road, all the way to Moshav Odaya, almost all the way to Moshav Odaya. And it was horrifying. I mean, I've unfortunately seen dead people in my life and dead bodies, and never in this. No, I've never seen piles of people, and I don't know who they were. I don't know if they were terrorists or if they were Israelis, but it was horrifying. I mean,
can only imagine. And now, a year and a half down the road, you're living with your wife and two kids.
Yeah.
Right? In Ruchama.
Yeah.
Ruchama, for those who are not familiar, is about 20 minutes east of Kfar Aza. Right? It's where the temporary living location is of the community. Thankfully, over 70% of the Kfar Aza families have decided to stay together and live in that temporary living location in caravans, or fancier caravans called caravillas. And
well, I have an apartment.
Oh, there you go. How did you do that?
He's from the lucky one.
We're in the hills.
The hills.
No, actually, they told us that you know, a lot of people want a caravilla, so you know, maybe we'll have to do a lottery between the members of the kibbutz. So we said no, we don't have any, no need for no need to fuss and no need to fight. If there is another alternative, so we'll take it. They gave us this, and it was a bigger apartment.
But it's a second floor.
It's a second floor.
Okay.
But we are young.
Okay.
You have a baby carriage.
Yeah. And it is a second floor, but the first floor is all storage, so it's okay. So, I mean, we have a lot of things. Because all of the places that we've moved, so we have, I think, like furniture for two apartments and everything. I mean,
you need storage.
Yeah.
So I get what accommodation is like, sort of. Mm-hmm. What's life like in Ruchama?
I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. The kibbutz itself is really nice, and they have a really special superpower,
which is.
they don't have any alarms.
Oh,
they don't. What?
Don't say.
Knock on wood. Don't jinx it.
They don't have any alarms, and I love it because after the October 7th, the October 7th events and the rocket firing to the center of Israel, to Tel Aviv area and Shfaim and everything, and the night of the drones in April from the attack from Iran, and then again the attack on October. I was really very, very, very much stressed from all of this. I mean, I couldn't bear anything. I don't want to see or hear about the war anymore. I wanted
That's
to end.
Understandable.
And when we came to Ruhama, and I'm going out outside to have a cigarette or something, or maybe a beer or two, and I'm waiting for the alarm, and the alarm doesn't come. And thank you.
That's a nice feeling.
That's a great feeling. I mean, I feel like a person again.
I was in Ruhama the other day. It was the evening of Yom HaZikaron. And there was a communal ceremony, beautiful communal ceremony.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop thinking about how we hear the attacks in the background while the ceremony is happening. But it was the IDF attacking.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it was almost surreal. Okay, more than a year into this war, even though the community is not in Kfar Aza per se, but rather again 20 minutes east of where they're supposed to be, and obviously mourning those who were lost on October 7th, but still listening to the sounds of the war in the background. So there are no sirens that go off per se, which is wonderful, but the war is still on.
The war is very much on. I mean, it was, I think, maybe 2 or 3 days ago, and we heard like a really strong explosion, a really strong bang, and the windows moved. I mean, the windows were really shaking.
In Ruhama.
In Ruhama. And we're talking about, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 kilometers, aerial kilometers mm-hmm. from the area. It's crazy. And my daughter, when I went with her to put her to sleep, and during me reading her stories, we heard the serious bang noise, and she came to me and she held me really tight, and she asked me, "What was that?"
Mm.
And I, you know, like a responsible father, I lied to her, and I told her, "I don't know, maybe it was some kind of a container that just fell down from a truck or something." It was like 8 in the evening, so. She was, okay, no problem.
But even though we hear some of the bombing, it's totally different when you're not so close to Gaza. It's like something, you don't have to be alert all the time. Only now we feel how much we've been alert 24/7. And here, okay, there is a war, but it's not right here.
Look, this whole year and a half, I lost all my hair color from it. I mean,
at least you have hair.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start with that. let me ask both of you, as members of Kfar Aza who live in Ruhama, that were in Kfar Aza on October 7th. Now, a year and a half into the war, while living in a temporary living location, having some peace and quiet on the one hand, but also understanding that the war is not ending tomorrow, what do you feel that the community that you are part of needs more than anything else? If we talk about Kfar Aza as a concept, okay, mm-hmm. not as a location, what does the community of Kfar Aza, regardless of the fact that they're in Ruhama, need today in order to stay the community of Kfar Aza?
Well, this is a big question. I can answer that from only my own perspective. As a young father, I have an internal struggle, okay, for like, I want to stay in the area. I really want to stay in the area. And Ruhama is pretty safe and everything. But the school system and everything, the educational system, everything, it's combined with the other kibbutzim. So my daughter and myself and my wife and my son, we will have no way to, you know, to even for one moment to let it go from this horrific day. And I don't know how to do it, but like the first and main thing, it's to give us some sort of a sense of being safe. Let us feel safe and nothing.
Do you feel safe in Ruhama?
I don't know if I can say that I feel safe. I do know that we have a lot more time now to, if something like that will happen, like October 7th, we have a couple more minutes to, you know, to
find shelter.
To find shelter, maybe to prepare ourselves and everything. Like,
so like the distance when I from thought the about border the second gives floor, you peace of mind.
When I thought about the second floor, one of the things that I thought about was that it will take to the terrorists more time to go upstairs. I mean, something that I took in my consideration. And I don't want to live like this.
Oleg, what do you think?
Sorry that I neglected you on the ground, but...
Yeah. On the ground floor.
Yeah.
First of all, of course, it's obvious, but I will say it anyway. We have to have Gali and Zivi, our hostages, back home. Because really, really, we cannot rebuild. And we cannot make the whole process of the healing without them. And it's really, I wake up with them. I wake up in the morning, I go to sleep with them. It's there all the time. We cannot breathe until they will be back.
You know, but I'm still in the Shfaim WhatsApp group. So Gaia Bing from the community always posts the daily picture of Gali and Zivi.
Every day.
Talk about like morning habits. You're right. It's a morning habit. I get the picture, the morning picture every day. Unfortunately, still get that morning picture every day thanks to Gaia. And post it on my social media as well to raise awareness.
But by the way, the what you said about Gali and Zivi, it's part of our sense of feeling safe, because right now two of our friends, I didn't really knew them, by the way. I didn't really know them.
Did Karen know them?
I don't think so. Karen is about 10 years older.
Yeah,
she does know her their older brother Leon, and I also had a chance to meet him a couple of times, but like. The main idea right now about being safe, it's like we have now two friends that are on the other side of the border, and they're people forgot about them. I mean, even myself, I needed the little reminder from Olit to. To talk about him once again, because it like a year and a half you're talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, and it's like the words like they lost all meaning. I mean, and we need to remember and understand that right now with the whole new operation in Gaza, the government and our leadership is sacrificing them. We have no other way to see that. And how can we be safe if we know that in the worst case scenario, our government will leave us?
I just wanted to add that this 2 years in Ruhama are really critical about us making decisions. This is really a time that it's going to take a time for us to make the decision. And if I see like people like Avidor, have a new baby born, and I can see them, and I see that lots of women now gave birth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy to see that. And if I'm hearing that they want to come back to the kibbutz, I want to say, yeah, I'm also going to come back. If Emily Damari will say, I'm going to Kfar Aza, there is no way I'm not going to be there with her. We think as a community, sometimes it's hard to explain.
Our editors, what you just said, that's the caption we need on social media from this episode, that exact sentence, but continue. Really? Yeah, sorry.
I'm not just Orit, I'm Orit, and so many other people. I grew up in this kibbutz, I know everybody, I look up to them. If some of the older people say that we are not coming back, I feel like shaking. No, you have to be back. What do you mean? And if I see that most of the people will feel, even if we will not feel 100% safe, I wish we would, but even if won't, if we have the sense that we can do it together, that we can handle everything together as a community, as a united community, I think it will be even greater than the feeling of secure, because I don't know if we'll ever feel secure there.
See, I was under the assumption, as someone who's not a member of Kfar Aza, but rather a friend of Kfar Aza, not to ask the people of Kfar Aza if they plan on returning it or not. Because it's kind of like it's almost a redundant question, because it's not an option yet. Right? When it's going to be an option, mm-hmm. we can raise the question and ask you what you think about it. And not that I think that people are not thinking about it or not talking about it, but it seems like the main goal of the work plan, of the communal work plan, is to keep the community together.
Yeah.
Right? Make sure the community has everything it needs in order to overcome barriers on a regular basis, because it's going to be a long journey. I'm sure that everyone is thinking about, you know, what am I going to do when push comes to shove? But unfortunately, we're not there yet. Maybe, Orita, as you're saying, there's also an upside to that, because you have the time to think. You have the time to process. You have the time to maybe get some strength from one another. For those who are listening to our episode, we know that many times they ask themselves, how can they get involved and what can they do in order to support the people of Kfar Aza? So, Avidor, I'm asking you, as a young father who's currently living in Ruhama with his wife and two kids, going through everything your family went through, what do you feel the community needs that maybe partners of Kfar Aza from outside and inside of the country are able to do, should think about? Is it in education? Is it welfare? Is it health or mental health? Is it a community program? Where do you recommend people get involved?
First of all of the above. I mean, first and foremost, we need all the help we can in all of the fields that we know of in order to help and bring back Gali and Zivi. That's first, because as I said before, we have friends of ours, children of the kibbutz, that are now, that have been taken and they held captive for more than a year, more than a year and a half. That's first. And to the other part of the answer, all of the above. I mean, we need, this is such a huge catastrophe. And everything was shattered. Everything needs to be rebuilt again, not only the physical buildings and you know, to renew the lawns and to replant the trees and everything. We need help in everything. I mean, the mental trauma that each and every one that even used to live in the kibbutz went through, and he has families in the area and everything, he needs treatment. All kinds of treatments. I don't know. Financial aid. I don't want to talk in those terms. But we need our brothers and sisters all over the world to be with us.
And can I ask you, what do you feel that you get from the community today? Because sometimes the things that the community is able to provide is not just thanks to the people who have stepped up and are creating, but also thanks to those who are making things possible. So
I found myself
a service, a program, something that you consume individually that is really benefiting you and your family?
I really don't think in those terms, but I can tell you that the communal life, And I started my things when I said that I'm a city boy, and I didn't really have a community. Although I grew up in the neighborhood, in the Shchuna, in Yudalef, not an easy neighborhood, in Be'er Sheva, but the community and those people that live around me, and I'm proud to call them my friends now, are the best people that I can think about. And I never thought that I would like to have a lot of people around me to help me and to, you know, to live as I don't want to say a one organism, but being like some sort of a coexistence with, not coexistence, but I lost the word for it, but you know, the communal life is amazing, and this is like the main thing that I'm getting from the kibbutz. When I came to the kibbutz and we started all of the membership process, so I didn't really think about what I'm gaining from it, besides like, you know, some sort of a different life for my children. So I just want the community to be together, and I want a communal life, and I want to live in a place where my front door is open and the kids from the neighbors come to our apartment if they want to have something to eat, just open the fridge. This is the type of life that I always wanted. I didn't know it, by the way, before I came to the kibbutz.
Until you had it. Amazing. I think Oren has some questions for you before we wrap up.
You're ready for a little quiz?
Okay. But like quick answers or?
Yeah, very quick answers. Okay. You have to be very quick.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's hear. What is the first words that come up to your mind when I say Kfar Aza?
Oh, beauty.
Beauty.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm.
It is a beautiful kibbutz. I mean, it really is. I mean, I always thought that Kibbutz Niram is a beautiful kibbutz. No offense. But Kfar Aza is a beautiful kibbutz.
If I will not live in Kfar Aza, I will live in?
A different kibbutz. Different kibbutz. I want to say in the Negev. I'm a Negev person.
Okay. What is a famous figure I would like to have coffee with?
Martin Scorsese.
Wow, I'm sure he's going to have a lot of questions for you.
I like short people.
If you will have a chance to have coffee with Trump, mm-hmm. what you have two sentences to say to him, what would it be?
Do more, Mr. President. Even more. No, he did a lot. I mean, I have
say in American, no, go big or go home, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, great. The last question. Since October 7, one thing that you can point that you have changed.
I became a father of two.
That is a very important point.
This is very big change.
What? No, because this is a really big change, because from a small household, mm-hmm. we've become like a real family. and I need to be now, like, I had the first chance with my daughter, and now with my son, I really need to become an adult. And
you know what I found out when I had my second son? I found out that two adults and two children in a household is not equal forces.
No, 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 no.
It's not as if it's two and two.
No, no.
They are the majority, even though it is the same number.
This is,
right?
This is a tiebreaker. I mean, a second
no
kid
tie.
Is a tiebreaker.
No tie here, yeah, absolutely.
In Hebrew, you say, Neshek Mafer Izun.
There you go, this right. It's true. It's true. I want to ask one final question before we wrap up this episode. And I'm going to be careful and not ask about you, but ask about your circles, your family circles, your friend circles, from Kfar Aza, when thinking about the people that are close to you, what do you feel or think has to happen in order for them to make the decision to go back home when it's time?
Oh, this is a good question. Well, I really don't know what to say, because because I think the whole reality needs to change. I mean, this is such a big question, because we live we now we are living in my in like in my point of view a lot of times, like I opened news sites or see like push updates or anything about from the news on the cell phone, and I say we live now in Orwellian dystopia. I mean, sometimes it's like the worst case scenario and it keeps getting worse. I mean, so I don't know what to say. We need to change everything. We need to rethink everything that we're doing here. I mean, in Israel in general. I mean, like now we have no other way. We are one people here in Israel. Okay, we are one people. We speak the same language, and we have the same beliefs and everything. And something here is not working. If we are a year and a half in this catastrophic and awful war. So we need to somehow, and I don't know how, I'm not that smart, to change the whole reality. Because the thing is, in order to everyone to come back to Gaza, we need come back to Kfar Aza, I mean, we need to remove all of the, we need to feel so safe that we will have to remove all of the safe rooms and all of the shelters and everything. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see them anymore. I mean, we had in the Gaza envelope, in the Western Negev, they used to have before 20, 25 years ago, they used to have maybe 3, 4, 5, 10 shelters in the kibbutz, okay? And there were underground shelters. Now you have in each and every apartment. So let's go back 30 years ago and see, like in this area, okay? So let's go back 30 years ago and try to somehow find a way how we can live in peace, because I don't know. I don't think that anyone deserves this kind of living. I mean, I love Ruhama and I have a really good life now. I mean, on paper. And but we are still living the war. And something's got to change. Something's got to give. I mean,
so if I understand you correctly, you're saying that in order for people to think about Kfar Aza in the future,
you need to create a new future.
Regardless or not, yeah. Like, the future needs to be different. Right? Yeah. People need to feel safe, and that's going to be the key.
I'm sorry for the pessimistic message, yes.
Maybe it's optimistic, actually.
How can you change reality?
I mean, for one, always believe that if you know what you want, that's like the first step of getting it, mm-hmm. right? It's not knowing what you want when things kind of get messed up. That's my own perspective. Well, no, understanding what you're aiming for and having a plan is something that, you know, I'm...
Well, I don't have a plan yet. And I'm just, you know, like, in a sense, like I see Diane said, there is no plan. We're just living.
Roll with the punches.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to thank our listeners for joining us today. And I would like to thank both of you, my new co-host, Orit Tzidikevich, and Avidol. Thank you so much for joining us on Kfar Aza Talk. It was wonderful. Finally, speaking to a young father who's going through all this. Not that I'm disrespecting, God forbid, the other, you know, guests that we had here that were on the younger side of the young adults, but it's nicer to have people who I personally have more in common with, mm-hmm. and really learn about your wife's family, learn about what's happening with you and Ruhama today. Hear about your thoughts on the future. I think it's really important for every person who wants to get involved with Kfar Aza and keep Kfar Aza close to heart to have these opportunities to learn more about the people, the families, and what the community is going through. So for everyone out there, thank you for supporting Kfar Aza. Thank you for looking up the Kfar Aza Foundation when you want to make a donation or get involved. And thank you for being with us on this very special episode. Toda.
Thank you. Toda.